Hey there, welcome back to Generation S, a podcast about growing up in the 90s and the early 2000s. I'm Dan Kemp, and if you're wondering why this week I'm starting with a cold open, which really doesn't ever happen anymore with this show, I'm going to tell you why. There's actually two reasons. One, I'm going to be out of town and did not have a chance to record any episodes for my backlog, so that's totally on me. My bad. I got to get back to it where I'm recording a few episodes at a time so that I have stuff ready to go for situations like this that arise again in the future. But there's a second reason, and that is more on a personal note as far as pro wrestling goes. So this week's episode is going to be focused on a classic Nintendo 64 wrestling game. The last time we really talked about this game on the podcast was back in episode 1, actually. So well over a year ago at this point, where we talked about some of the wrestling games. And we actually recorded this, Lou and I recorded this for YouTube a while back. I mean, again, over a year ago at this point. So, but it's only been on YouTube. I thought it was going to be a YouTube exclusive, but I also thought there's maybe a good opportunity here to share it with you on the regular podcast platforms. So pro wrestling is in a bit of a sad state right now. A lot of sad news coming out of pro wrestling. We had not one, but two pro wrestlers pass away recently, one of which was retired for many years, or at least, you know, 3 or 4 years. Terry Funk. He was in his 70s. I can't remember his exact age, but he passed away recently. And that one, bittersweet, right? Because, you know, it's always sad to see some of your favorite wrestlers growing up pass away. But he's an older guy. He lived a full life. You know, I know his wife had passed away just a couple of years ago. So, you know, you look at that and go, man, what a hell of a way to go out. What a life that guy lived. You know, nothing but celebrations there. So, but on the other hand, if you are a wrestling fan, you already know this, but Bray Wyatt, real name Wyndham Rotundo, passed away recently, and he was an active member of the WWE roster, passed away from an undisclosed illness. Some say it's COVID-related. Some say it's heart condition. I don't know. I don't know the exact cause of death, and it doesn't really matter because he's a younger dude. He's our age, right? If you're listening to this and you're part of Generation S, he's our age. He's 36 years old, leaving behind a fiance and beautiful children. So that, super sad. You know, they've already done some tribute shows to him, and I'm sure there's going to be more coming along the way here, but that one hurt. Even if you're not an active wrestling fan and you know who Bray Wyatt is, it's never fun for a wrestler to pass away from anything. But when they're in the prime of their life and it's something as simple as an illness, it's not like he was out drinking and died of an overdose on drugs or anything like that. This was, the guy was sick, he was trying to get better, and he didn't. And, you know, there's not much more he can say about it. So something like that is definitely harder to process. So I thought this week would be a fun time to bring out one from the vault where Lou and I, we dive deep. And I'm talking deep. This is going to be a longer episode, but a fun one. If you played any of the N64 wrestling games from back in the day, I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. If you're not a wrestling fan or a Nintendo 64 games fan, then, you know, feel free to skip. We're, what, at the 3-minute mark? So I think technically I've already got your download credit if you want to move on from this one. But I would love it if you gave it a listen. Again, it's Lou and I just doing what we do best. We're hanging back. We're shooting the breeze. And we had a lot of fun with this one last year. So if you do want to hear us do deep dives on video games for the main podcast in the future, let us know. This will be, it's up on YouTube, but let us know on Instagram or Facebook or any of those. And next week, we'll hopefully have a recorded episode in the bank ready to go so that it won't miss a beat. I'll still be out of town. So here's hoping. But if you've listened this far, thank you for sticking around and kick back, relax, and listen to Lou and I talk all about WCW NWO Revenge for the Nintendo 64 on Generation S.
What is it?
It's time to go back.
Welcome.
All right, man. So, listen, I mean, I'm going to step back and go ahead and take it from here, man. What are we talking about today?
We are talking about WCW NWO Revenge on Nintendo 64. That is today's topic.
Great game.
Great game.
I know we talked about it on the previous pro wrestling episode, but I just once again want to say, love this game.
Yes. I think we touched on it in both the pro wrestling episode and the video game episode separately, but it needs a deeper dive because of our connection as friends, just in general, but in the history of video games and professional wrestling, this maybe it stands head and shoulders above the rest. In general, at the time, it was way above and beyond anything else that came out before it.
I think, I mean, legitimately, probably the best wrestling game of the 90s. I mean, because you had, in the late 90s, you had like the SmackDown game. Well, the first SmackDown game came out in 99, and I think it was near the end of 99, if I'm not mistaken.
It was probably around the late fall.
Yeah, so
just in time for the holidays,
and it was okay. I still this was more fun to me. Again, the only one that is just as good as this one, it's got to be No Mercy, and I'm sure we'll either we will or you definitely will do a future deep dive on WWF No Mercy. But this was the first one that I played of this game engine, this style of wrestling game.
And we're gonna get into that because this was a sequel to another WCW game. Doesn't get as much love. It's not as good, but we'll get into that. So we're going to... Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, no, I was just going to say, so do you... I mean, just so we can kind of let the listeners know what, what's the plan here? How are you going to be doing these? Are we going to review it? Are we going to talk about the behind the scenes? What's your plan?
Oh, sure. So we're going to go over the history of the game. We're going to go over, when it was created, the changes that came into this new game from the previous WCW games, some awards that it won, just to give you an overall view of it. And it's not just me and Dan thinking, oh, this is a great game. There are some accolades that go along with us saying it is. We have data that proves so. Data and numbers.
We have data and numbers, and like no one can see this, obviously, but I'm looking at our notes for this, and I already told you this off air, but very, very thorough notes, and again, a lot of stuff here that you found through your research that I had no idea about.
Neither did I. I found out stuff today as I was doing some last-minute research that I still did not know about, and I just played the game about 2 weeks ago. So we're going to go over, a little bit of the development, a little bit of the road to creating Revenge. Some new features that were coming into this game from previous games. The previous game was called WCW NWO World Tour. So what was new to this game? And there's a lot. There is a lot of new features. Some things you may not know about even after playing the game. Some things that were changed or removed when the game was in development. And then we're going to finish it up with our memories about it. Some discussion, memories, what we liked about the game, what we disliked about the game, and maybe some friendly arguments as we go along.
So before we talk about Revenge, then you mentioned this was a sequel to World Tour. Did you ever play World Tour?
I did. World Tour came out in 97, so it came out about a year before this. And I do remember playing it, and it was, man, the potential was there. It was a good game. But
had you played it before you played Revenge, though?
Yes, I did. I did.
Okay, see, I played it afterwards, and so I played it, and I'm like, this is awful.
Yeah.
Because I had played Revenge at that point, which, again, was to me the pinnacle of wrestling games. And so when I went back and played this other game that I, quite frankly, never heard of, I just felt that, like, wow, this was like a step backwards. And then I realized that it came out first, so I was like, okay, it gets a pass.
Yeah, absolutely. If you have not played these games and you're a newer wrestling fan, it's worth picking up, but do yourself a favor. If you're able to get both copies, or both on emulation, because let's be honest, that's how a lot of people play these games now. Go with World Tour first. Try it out. It's going to be a little rough, but there's pieces of it that are good. It certainly lays the foundation, and then play Revenge, and you go, okay. And if you really can go in order, World Tour, Revenge, then go to the WWF games, WrestleMania, and No Mercy. If you go the wrong way, it's not going to be as enjoyable. Kind of like the Star Wars movies.
See, I would agree to a point, but the only one I feel like you could go backwards and play after playing maybe No Mercy would be Revenge. I think it's more than World Tour, I'd say more than WrestleMania. Like, it holds up. It's still incredibly fun to play. Whereas, like, honestly, like, after playing Revenge and you've played World Tour, there's really nothing to bring you back to World Tour other than maybe some of the cool, like, Japanese wrestlers. But honestly, like, I didn't need to go back to World Tour, you know what I mean? Whereas I've played No Mercy, but I can go back and enjoy Revenge. Does that make sense?
It does, but it's also different rosters.
And that's true, too.
Yes. Yeah. I think that that has an effect on it, too, because I think a lot of people, I'm not one of them. I'm the whack job that still likes WrestleMania over No Mercy. I believe a lot of people, once they play No Mercy, they're like, ah, I don't need WrestleMania. And then there's a lot of people that play Revenge, like, ah, I don't need World Tour.
Well, see, what I liked about No Mercy, and I know this is a Revenge episode, but I know with No Mercy, what I liked was the fact that it had like those branching storylines, which you did not really have with any of the previous games in this series. So I think that's really what it added, plus the new match types and stuff like that. But
oh, yeah, there's tons of match types. And that's actually one of the downfalls, not downfalls, weak points of Revenge is the match types.
Yeah, because they're pretty limited, and we'll talk about that, obviously, but they're definitely limited. I mean, still great, and still, you know, there's plenty of options, but compared to some games, especially games that have come out, you know, in the last 10, 15 years, I mean, pales in comparison in terms of, you know, match variety, but...
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
It's all about the gameplay, and that, to me, is where this is the pinnacle or the shining star, at least of the 90s when it comes to wrestling.
You missed
games.
A perfect opportunity. It's all about the game and how you play it.
Well, this is WCW. Triple H is WWF.
I thought for certain you were going to say that. he's going to say it. Nope, he didn't.
I didn't say it. Oh, my gosh.
That was very
disappointing. That's how you know. That's this. Well, that we didn't write that down. This is not scripted. We're just talking, man.
I know, but I'm disappointed. Almost as disappointed as the year this came out, the Jets almost got to the Super Bowl. Did you know that?
Oh, my God. There it is. The New York Jets reference.
Did you know the Jets almost went to the Super Bowl in 1998?
I did not. I was not following any kind of football at that
point.
Yeah,
they almost did, but they ended up on the two. They were 2 yards short. No joke. Go watch it up.
2 yards short?
2 yards short, and they lost, and they were not able to go to the Super Bowl. But I digress. Should we get into Revenge?
Let's do it.
All right. So like I previously mentioned, this is the sequel to World Tour. World Tour came out on November 30th, 1997, just in time for the holidays. Look at that.
Yeah. It's crazy how that works.
It's amazing. So this game came out, Revenge, came out on October 26th, 1998. Both games were exclusive for the Nintendo 64. Interesting note is that the game came out one day after Halloween Havoc 1998, which I was watching literally about 30 minutes before we did this show because I wanted to get more of a feel for what was going on in WCW. Dan, do you have any memories of Halloween Havoc 98?
So, I think I mentioned this previously. I didn't really get into wrestling heavy until, like, honestly, 2000, and it was WCW. So, like, people have, like, criticized, like, why would you get into it during the worst time period of the second place company? I said, I don't know, man. It was it had Sting, and he was awesome. So, I honestly wasn't watching at the time. Going back now, of course, I've watched, you know, matches and whatnot from this era. I actually there's a YouTuber on here. His name is he's called Wrestling Bios, and
he's
I think you've watched him as well.
He's
amazing. So, but he's doing a series called Reliving the War, where every week he puts out an episode that compares head to head Raw versus Nitro. And right now he just started 1998, so he hasn't gotten to like the late 98, like where this when this game came out and the wolf and you know when everything was going on with like the Wolf Pack and everything. But that's coming soon. Like I think he's up to I want to say February at this point in, you know, in 1998, as far as because he does every week is one episode, mm-hmm. you know, for each show. So I don't have a lot of memories. Really, what I remember is around that time, again, you had the NWO Wolf Pack. And so there were kids in my school that, you know, I think I mentioned this on the pro wrestling episode way back when of like, you know, everyone was in the Wolf Pack and I wanted to be in the Wolf Pack and they wouldn't let me. And they said, fine, you could join the Wolf Pack. You have to be Disco Inferno. And I was like, that's cool, man. So for a while, Disco Inferno, when I saw him wrestle on TV, I'm like, this guy's got to be great. He was in the Wolf Pack. And then I watched him wrestle and I'm like, this guy's not great. He's pretty terrible.
I actually just watched him fight Juventud Guerrera, at Halloween Havoc, and damn, Disco's bland. He's super bland.
Is he in the Wolf Pack during this time period?
I think the Wolf Pack had just started. I didn't get up to full disclosure. I actually had to stop it to record this right when they were doing the Kevin Nash versus Scott Hall match. And I was not watching WCW very much at this point on a weekly basis. I was all in on WWF, and I was starting to get more and more into ECW. And I had read that they were taking Scott Hall's real-life alcoholism onto a storyline. And in the video package, they showed it. He was stumbling around. They pretend that he got sick. Nash said, you know, this is your last call, and he kind of made fun of him. So, yeah, this was starting to be when WCW was turning the corner in a not such a good way.
Yeah.
But 98's Halloween Havoc was the famous or infamous Goldberg-DDP match that, you know, the bell rang, and then, boop, we lost the feed because they went over the time limit.
Oh, that's right, because they ended up showing it in its entirety on Nitro the next night, right?
Correct, as and like it's regarded as one of Goldberg's best matches, not even of just WCW, just of all time.
No, I was going to say, I mean, I've always loved Goldberg. Like, even his bad matches to me are fun to watch just because he's just beating the shit out of guys. Like, it's just great. But watching him have an actual competitive match, you didn't get that often. And when you did, a lot of times it didn't always look the best. And so I feel that I would agree. Goldberg versus DDP, I think DDP brought the best out of Goldberg that you could. I think there are very few wrestlers that are able to do that for Goldberg. No offense. I mean, again, I think he's
Steven
a terrific
Regal?
Talent. I mean, that actually, funny enough, so when we're recording this, which is the end of September, I'm assuming this episode's going to be out pretty soon on YouTube, so this won't be too far behind. But if you go to Wrestling Bios, I think the next episode that comes out this week, in fact, talks about the Nitro, the infamous Nitro where Steven Regal wrestles Goldberg.
Kind of shoots on him a little bit because he was frustrated that Goldberg was doing nothing.
Yep. And so that will be, it still wasn't a great match. I still think that DDP versus Goldberg was leaps and bounds better.
Yes.
I would say it's probably Goldberg's best match in, I guess, ever,
period.
Really. Yeah.
I mean, I can't think of anything that's better. I mean, the Hogan match.
As far as most competitive. Yes. I mean, well, even the Hogan match that was full of, which hadn't happened, you know, happens later in the year.
No, because Goldberg's a champ here.
He's the WCW champ?
Yeah, he beat Hogan in summer of 98.
Oh, that's right. And he's fighting. I thought he was fighting DDP for the U.S. title.
No,
I
mean, main
that
event.
That was at a previous.
This is main event. Okay. This is for the world title.
Okay. And so, yeah, so he already won the title. And again, that match was full of chicanery and cheating.
Shenanigans.
And really, it was just a spear and a jackhammer. Like, this was a back and forth competitive. I can't believe I forgot that it was for the world title. I remember the match, but I couldn't remember which title it was for.
Got the ECW guy telling WCW guy what's going on. This is ridiculous.
I know, man. This is insane.
Me telling you that Goldberg is the champ is like you telling me what Dawn Marie wore at a certain event in 1999 in ECW. I want you to realize the magnitude of this.
Yeah, but again, I wasn't watching WCW at this time, so I wasn't invested in the story. No, it's not. I guarantee you, if we talked anything from WCW January of 2000 until they closed shop in early 2001, I can probably tell you who had the title when.
Okay, how about this? Every game that WCW released after this revenge game was terrible. Yeah. That's my take on WCW.
I would 100% agree.
In 2001.
I would 100% agree.
So, Halloween Havoc 98 happens, and I'm watching it. There is not one mention of this game coming out tomorrow. Not one. Now, granted,
they
I'm about...
They didn't promote it at all on the pay-per-view.
Not that I've seen. Now, again, I did not watch the entire thing. I'm up to literally the promo package for Hall and Nash. It's a pretty good card. Sting versus Bret Hart. Warrior versus Hogan. God help us all.
Oh, I remember that match.
Too. Yeah.
Terrible match. That match is the reason that the British Bulldog ended up retiring.
Oh, that's right, because he hurt his back. But he came.
He hurt his back on the trapdoor that the Ultimate Warrior would use to come in and out of the ring.
Oh, that's right. But he did go back to the WWF.
Yeah, but he was injured. Yeah. He didn't last long. He was done.
A lot of chin locks.
This was his career-ending injury. Yeah, well, there's a lot of Davey Boy Smith chin locks. But no, man, there's like a lot of resentment because of that, because they feel like, well, if this didn't happen, then, you know, maybe British Bulldog would have, you know, been around longer. Yep. Who knows?
Hopefully that is was the case. You know, and there wasn't any other issues that we don't know about. But yeah, I did read the reports way back in the day that it was the trap door that hurt the Bulldog. Halloween Havoc 98, no promotions about this game, which if you're a fan of WCW in 99, 2000, let's just say towards the end of WCW, I don't think you're surprised that they were not promoting this game. Now, granted, they did have a sponsor for Halloween Havoc 98. It was Snickers.
How many shows did they sponsor, by the way? I feel like I've seen them on most W. It was like Snickers and Slim Jim would like flip a coin for who got to sponsor that pay-per-view.
I thought it was Slim Jim was usually Halloween Havoc, but maybe They outbid them? Or
well, I'm just saying in general. I feel like Snickers sponsored a lot of WCW pay-per-views.
Yeah, you want to feel old? Go watch some WCW pay-per-views. It's sponsored by 10-10-3-2-1.
Yeah. I do remember.
Yeah, how about that? That's nostalgia.
Is that with David Arquette did those commercials for a while?
Ooh, yeah. You know what? They probably got him to do the commercials. Like, hey, you want to be champ too, bro? Let's go.
It would be a total swerve,
oh,
bro.
Oh, terrible shit. Terrible.
Oh, my God.
Terrible. So, Halloween Havoc, no promotions for this game. But I did learn something today.
What's that?
The original game was, excuse me, the original name for the game was just WCW NWO Live. Now, I don't know if it was WCW versus NWO, but Revenge was originally just Live. I don't know. It was just Live. There's some promotional art you could see online if you do a quick Goog. It's like Hall and Nash looking down at the camera in a studio, and the top right corner has the black and white WCW / NWO logo, and it's just Live. And in red, similar font, but I did not know that.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that. Honestly, I mean, not a bad name, WCW NWO Live. I feel like that would have been fine.
No, I think you're right, but then it hit me. I remember, and I had to look online and look at some matches on YouTube of gameplay. So if you're playing the game, and back then you couldn't change the camera angle, and it's different, was different, is different than the way you play WWE games now, where it's the hard camera. It's presented the same way in the WWE games as it is on TV. You don't see the entrance.
Right.
Revenge,
correct.
You're looking, and the entrance is in the background. You're looking at it that way. So it's a little bit of a different view. So,
That's how they did it for most wrestling games,
yeah,
until the later SmackDown games. Like, because I remember, like, WWF Attitude had that camera view.
Yep.
All the ECW games did. The later WCW games did. So that was, like, a common view for a lot of those games.
I liked it. I thought it was cool.
I did, too, because I like seeing the entrance way.
Yeah.
It made each kind of venue feel unique.
I agree. It gave you a little bit of an extra feel. But if you're playing Revenge, there's a couple of signs or posters, but they're not being held by the people in the crowd. They're actually on the guardrail. And one of them says WCW NWO Live.
Interesting.
So
okay.
I thought back in the day it was just like an advertisement for like live, meaning literally live.
Like their live show
live
or whatever.
Tour, like,
yeah.
WWE Live. Experience it live or something like that. I never put two and two together. I'm like, oh, is that, why does it say live there? Like, no, you want me to go see it live and give you more of my money or my parents' money? So that was interesting. I was able to connect those dots that they left it in the game, which is not terrible, but little Easter egg there.
So I'm wondering why they changed the name to Revenge. Were you able to find out anything about that?
I believe it was going off of the Sting-Hogan rivalry. I didn't see any evidence to prove this. But if you recall,
was Sting and Hogan still going on at this point?
No, not so much. Because
no.
Sting was in the Wolfpack, but the development of the game was in 97 when Sting and Hogan were. That's why, if you remember the end of the intro, it's, you know, a picture of Hogan and a picture of Sting, and they lock eyes and it explodes. It's
yes.
going off of the Sting Hogan Sting NWO storyline, which was everything of 97. I mean, it completely dominated. Absolutely everything,
right.
Not even just WCW, it's all of wrestling.
Oh, that was definitely the hot angle of 97.
Yeah.
And of course, we know how that ended.
Oh, jeez.
I guess that would make sense then to call it Revenge, but here's the thing, like, I mean, they had it called Live in development, so I don't know. I don't know.
It's not a terrible name, but you know what
no,
is
No, it's
terrible?
Not at all.
We know what's terrible
that?
Is the price they were charging for this game.
Oh,
not
really?
In retail. But if you were to watch WCW programming or see an ad in WCW magazine, what do you think they were charged for this?
Well, I mean, I got to go off of what games cost back, which honestly, I can't remember. Do you remember what a normal game would cost back in the late
90s? I don't know, but I know it wasn't this price.
Okay.
I want to say that maybe $40 for an N64 game.
$40? Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I got to assume that, I mean, you're making it sound like this is maybe a little bit more, so I'm going to say, what, $45, maybe $50?
$69.95.
Holy shit. That's $70.
Plus $8.95 shipping.
Well, everything had shipping and handling
plus
back then.
Plus your tax. So you're looking at probably $85, give or take.
Well, God, I mean, that's, I mean, yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, it was a lot.
I didn't pay that much when I got it for free from a friend, so I didn't pay for it at all. But I definitely wouldn't have paid $70 for it plus shipping.
No, that was a lot. But was it worth it? So we're going to go into a little bit of the features that are new to it, some awards that came from it, just to back up our claim that it is one of the best wrestling games of all time. And then we'll do a deeper dive into the features. So there are some new modes. Obviously, we talked about the roster of WCW. We mentioned Bret Hart. We mentioned Sting. There's 60-plus wrestlers in this game. The ring entrances are there. They were not there in previous games. The arenas are there. Valets, managers. They have a cartoon of the WCW referee, Mark Curtis. So they put a lot of effort into this. And again, we'll go into details in a few moments. Reversals are a big thing in this game. Instant replay. Guys stepping over the top rope. Sounds silly, but your big guys were going over the top rope. These are all things that were new to this. But the foundation was laid in the previous game. So Revenge did win Fighting Game of the Year, which was given out by the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences. So it won that award, but the year before, World Tour won it as well. So back-to-back years where okay. THQ and AKI or Aki won awards for these fighting games. But the bad thing is, this was the last AKI-developed WCW game for the N64. The next game yes. that came out was Nitro, and it was not nearly as good. So just giving you the foundation of the game, some of the new features we're going to be talking about, the accolades that the predecessor had, and this was it. It was kind of a downward spiral, and maybe we can go into, the other WCW games.
Oh, yeah. I don't think we'll be doing a deep dive in any other WCW games unless it's just to rip them apart.
Yeah, and we could probably do them all in one show and just be like, Nitro sucks, Thunder sucks, Mayhem yeah. sucks, Backstage Assault is pretty much an ECW ripoff game, and we're done.
Yeah, basically. And I know they were supposed to come out with one for the PS2, but do you know what that game turned into?
Don't say Legends of Wrestling, because I don't think that's true.
No.
Okay.
No, it's not true.
Oh, is it Def Jam?
It is Def Jam Vendetta. So if you ever played that game, that was essentially a spiritual successor to the WCW, which honestly would have been amazing because that game was fantastic.
It was. That was a great game. And so, I'm not into hip hop or rap or whatever. And I played it and it was a great game.
That was a hell of a wrestling game. And because it's the same engine. It's where they improved on that Aki engine, right? That's
yep.
Because we didn't talk about this either, but this was all these WCW games were based off of Japanese games, the mm-hmm. Virtual Pro Wrestling series that was on the N64 over in Japan. And those were great. I mean, again, they followed the same kind of development cycle as the WCW games, where the first couple were a little rough, but Virtual Pro Wrestling 2, have you ever seen gameplay of that, by the way?
I have.
It's basically this game, but just Japanese. The sound effects are all the same. Now, the roster is all, Japanese wrestlers and whatnot. There's some American wrestlers in there that were, popular wrestlers in Japan, like Vader and Andre the Giant, and there's a few others. But it played just like this. So anyway, I just feel like people should know, like many other things that we've consumed in American entertainment, it was based off of something that came out in Japan first.
Go, go, Power Rangers. Oh, sorry, wrong show. So we can agree that this was the peak of WCW video games. I think that's pretty universal. I interrupted with an incorrect assumption. I thought you were going to say Legends of Wrestling. Did you know that Legends of Wrestling was going to be ECW on the next gen?
I did know that, and that's why they included Sabu and RVD in it.
Yes.
Right?
Yep. Van Damme was obviously the face of ECW, Sabu. I don't know why. Maybe because he was not in ECW at the end. The last year he was not there, so maybe they were going to bring him in as a legend, so to speak, because he was in the first game, he wasn't in the second game, and he was developed or in development for the what would end up being Legends of Wrestling. But let's get back to Revenge.
Right.
Let's go over some of the new stuff they brought into this game, and a lot of this stuff, it's going to sound silly saying that, like, oh, they had actual arenas. Because now you can make your own arena. You can do anything you want.
Yeah, but back then, there was a big deal back then.
This was a really, really big deal. And I want to get your thoughts on, you know, what arena you liked in the game. And then if you can recall, you know, what the set looked like in real life, do you have a preference? So I'm going to run down what they had in the game. So they had Monday Nitro.
Yep.
Starrcade 97 version of Starrcade, which is interesting because the logo, when they come out, where it would say 1997 along the bottom, is just cut off. Not cut off. It says AKI on it, but then the name holder, the nameplate, says 1997 on it. So, there you
go. Well, because Starrcade 98 hadn't come out yet when the game came out.
Oh, yeah. But it's just weird that one section says AKI and then the other section says 1997.
Right, right. Okay. All right, so we got Nitro, Starrcade.
Bash at the Beach, Sold mm-hmm. Out, Super Brawl, and Halloween Havoc.
Okay.
So a good selection, not all of them, but for, you know, the limitations of the N64, that's certainly a large, not a large, but it's certainly a significant jump in selection. So did you have a preference in the game? Did you have an arena that you liked? And do you recall any of these arenas in real life as well?
So I'm trying to think. So
I mean, yes, Nitro, I know you know in real life, but
I knew Nitro. I honestly, it's funny because like I'll go back and watch matches from this time period, and I got to tell you, I mean, I don't know if you'll agree, but I feel like they pretty much nailed the arena entrance ramp at least for most of these. I think the most accurate maybe was Halloween Havoc. That's the one I probably remember the most from this game. I got to say, though, because what I liked about this, too, is if you recall, when you selected the arena, that was like the background of like the screen, like the character selection screen, everything like that. So it was kind of the whole vibe. I think Super Brawl was probably my favorite. I don't know why. I think it was just because it was bright and red and it was colorful. And it was either my favorite, probably Super Brawl, or honestly, the opposite direction, probably NWO Sold Out.
Really? That's weird.
I don't know. It was just a weird yellow with the, and again, that was when I feel like really was properly represented, because again, I just watched the review of No Way Out, Sold Out 1998 on the Wrestling Bios channel, who, by the way, hopefully listens to this. Ryan, hi. I don't think he's going to listen to this. But anyway, I feel like that was one that they really did a good job of capturing the entranceway that was being used for that pay-per-view.
You know what's funny? I like the complete opposite. I like the Halloween Havoc and Bash at the Beach in the game. I thought they were different. I thought they put a lot of detail into them. Sold Out is probably my least favorite because it's just kind of... Well, Sold Out and Starrcade is just one static image. I didn't find them to be too exciting. However, Super Brawl, I want to say it was Super Brawl 8.
I can't remember what number.
The actual set that the wrestlers used was interesting because when they came out, it was like this long... It wasn't LED because obviously LED wasn't out, but it was a long, narrow screen. It was a very unique entrance.
I do, like, you're talking about in real life.
In
like
real
the
life,
actual,
yes.
Yes, I remember it that too. Like, they would walk out from the, like, from the corners almost, right?
Yeah, yeah, it was a very different type of setup. So, in real life, Super Brawl wins Halloween Havoc and Bash at the Beach in the game because they were different. And then Monday Nitro, as silly as it sounds, is a great arena in the game. I say that because it's the most common. It's been in every game, you know, that WCW released. They had a version of Monday Nitro, and then WWE in their games have had versions of Monday Nitro. But man, for 1998, that Nitro arena looked pretty damn sharp as well.
I know, it definitely looked great. And I think for the most part, they did a good job of, again, capturing that feel that the previous games especially didn't do. But I had a question for you. So that Halloween Havoc one, I feel like if you're to picture any WCW pay-per-view logo in your head, I feel like Halloween Havoc's got to be one of the easiest ones to like identify. Like if you were to just look at the image without the font or the text or whatever. So that, do you know that weird phantom-y looking guy they used on it?
Yes, I do.
Is that based off of anything that you know of?
Maybe it was when the Dungeon of Doom was fighting Hogan in like 94, 95-ish.
Okay. Maybe. Cause like,
I don't think so, though.
I mean, I'm like, maybe it's supposed to be like
the
a
Yeti
ghost wrestler. It could be the Yeti. I just didn't know if you knew. Like, I always, because they used it a couple of years in a row, that logo, right? With that dude on it.
Yes, they did. And I think it's one of the best. names or entrances, like the whole aura of Halloween Havoc is very, very good. And I was very disappointed when WWE bought WCW. They brought over the Great American Bash. I mean, that's a great pay-per-view also.
Yep.
It was weird it wasn't in the game, but that was the only name that WWE used for the longest time, and now NXT is starting to use some of these older WCW. I think they used ECW's Heatwave, I believe so, or something like that, but I know they've used Halloween Havoc. It's fantastic. It's very exciting.
Yeah,
it's a small thing in life.
Even the name, Halloween Havoc, it just sounds like, all right, these guys, we're in for a fight. You know, you watch the show, it's, you know what you're going to get just by the name. Like, the name Starrcade, I mean, I'm probably sound really ignorant, but like, what does that even mean?
It means like, you're a star.
On what?
A cave.
On the arcade?
Yeah. Lancecade. Garrisoncade.
Okay.
Arcade.
That's what I thought. So, anyway.
And
so,
they made that into a glorified house show. Starrcade.
Well, I did know that. Yeah, now that WWE kind of butchered it. But I know, so I just looking back at like all the old WCW and the WWF pay-per-view names back in the day, like some of them were just awesome. Like you had, you know, just again, Halloween Havoc, you had the Great American Bash, Bash at the Beach, Super Brawl. And then on the WWF side, you had No Mercy and Armageddon and, you know, the Royal Rumble, even in WrestleMania. I mean, just great names. And I feel like now, I mean, we're coming back to it a little bit, but for many years, WWE in particular has just very bland and boring branding on their are they even pay-per-views anymore? I mean, they're all on the network.
They call premium events now.
Premium events. So they're premium events. Well, I'll say this: the names of their premium events suck, and they need to really improve them. And I think they've started. Like, you had that Clash at the Castle recently. That's an awesome concept.
Yeah.
You know, and you still have WrestleMania. You have Survivor Series. You have those. But then you've got, like, Money in the Bank or Hell in a... Basically, you turn match types into pay-per-views.
Elimination Chamber.
You know? So, like, I don't like that. I like the name of those for match types. I don't think they work for premium event names.
I will agree, but there is one, and is actually... It's the first time I think we're mentioning the podcast. Not podcast, YouTube. Same difference.
It's still a podcast.
It's still the same to me, damn it. TNA Lockdown.
Yeah.
It was an all pay-per-view in the steel cage. Was the first, I believe, I'm pretty confident saying this, it was the first fully gimmicked pay-per-view. But it wasn't just TNA presents Steel Cage. Lockdown.
No, they had a name for it.
Lockdown, well, that's like, Six Sides of Steel.
Well, do you remember? So, okay, when WWE would be using the Elimination Chamber, they used to hold that. Eventually, it would become a staple of No Way Out.
Yeah.
And that was the whole gimmick of, like, you're not getting out, it's the chamber. So, like, that works for it. Now, they had No Way Out before they had the Elimination Chamber, but my point being is that fit perfectly for that pay-per-view name.
Yeah.
And so, when they just started calling it Elimination Chamber, it's like, that's lame, because A, not every match is going to be in the Elimination Chamber. It's very misleading. And B, it's just boring. So, I think TNA Lockdown might have been the only one since that every single match was in that gimmick. Have there been any other since then, WWE or otherwise, that have been every single match utilized the gimmick of whatever the pay-per-view is called?
Yes, actually, it's very ironic. I don't know if you're teeing this up for me on purpose. I just read an article today because, like Dan said, we are recording the end of September 2022. Extreme Rules is going to be, and in Philadelphia, out of all places, God help them, they're having an extreme pay-per-view in Philadelphia. Good for them. But there's been Extreme Rules pay-per-views where not every match is Extreme Rules. That makes no freaking sense.
Yeah.
The first one was. The first Extreme Rules, every match had some sort of gimmick, whether it be I can't remember if they just said everything's Extreme Rules or it's a chairs match, it's a ladder match, it's a kendo stick match, but I do remember seeing that as of right now the Extreme Rules premium event has something going on in them,
so every single match has some sort of Extreme Rules stipulation,
or it's just Extreme Rules. I'm not up to the, you know, day-to-day WWE stuff right now, but that is what I read. The first Extreme Rules had everything be extreme, then could you imagine? We're going to have a match called pay-per-view called Extreme Rules, and this match is scheduled for one fall. Okay, well, what's extreme about it? Paul Heyman would say, well, Paul Heyman would say extreme was not always blood and guts. Extreme was the type of wrestling you did.
Okay.
So take that for what it's worth. But Paul's word is always not the best to go with.
That's fair.
Yes. But yeah, I agree. I think TNA had some good names. I think Lockdown was certainly one of them. Nothing jumps out to me about ECW's names other than the first, which was barely legal because it kind of was. It got kicked off pay-per-view. So that's another thing, you know, names that are relevant. Like you said, Clash at the Castle, that makes sense. Barely yep. legal, that made sense. If you are a fan of that genre of wrestling, boy, did that pay-per-view name kind of go with. And there's also some innuendos of Barely Legal and ECW and women and all that stuff. But I agree. For the
it was
most,
a different time.
It was. For the most part, I will say that WCW had the best pay-per-view names. AEW's right now, no. They're just, what the hell is a Full Gear? A Full Gear of War? What is that?
Yeah.
All well, In, All Out. Good ones. What, All In, All Out? And what am I talking about? My belly button? What are we talking about here?
I like some of AEW's names. I like Double or Nothing. I like All In. I like some of those. I don't like all of them.
They did Bash at the Beach.
That's right, because I think Dusty Cody. Rhodes and Cody own the rights to it, yeah. So they were able to do Bash at the Beach. Now that Cody's back in WWE, though, do you think they'll do a Bash at the Beach in WWE?
Jeez, that would be really... I don't think Cody would do that. I don't think he would take that away from Tony Khan. I don't think he's that kind of spiteful guy. I don't think Triple H is either. Vince would.
That's fair, but well, Vince is gone, as we know.
He is, so we think.
Yeah. All right, so... We talked about those arenas. What are some other new things?
Well, speaking about the arenas, one last thing that. You had mentioned that they were the background of the main menu. Did you know, and I didn't know this, did you know the last arena you picked was always what was in the background? So if you...
That I did not know.
I didn't know that either, but I don't know how long. So when I booted up the game for the first time, and I don't know how many, I would say 10 years, 15 years, maybe? I know I played with you in college because you won one of the titles with one of the random guys in the game. And I know I didn't, so it must have been you.
Yeah.
So figure at least 12 years or so. So okay. When I booted that game up the first time in 12 years and Arena whatever, Arena X, Nitro or Bash at the Beach, whatever it was that the last arena I used 12 years ago? I like to think so, but...
Probably, yeah.
That'd be crazy. So another good thing about this game was it also didn't need a memory card. Or the little thing.
Yeah, it was all stored in the cartridge. Yes. Well, a lot of games on the N64 had the built-in memory, right? There was a few that you needed a memory. In fact, there was another wrestling game. I think I talked about this previously, WWF Attitude. You needed a memory card to save any kind of progress or created wrestlers, anything like that. It did not store in the cartridge, which thankfully in future WWF N64 games they remedied. But I remember that specifically. It was a big pain point for me because I did not have a memory card.
I don't know. Well, I'm sorry, I should rephrase that. I don't recall that because I never played any wrestling games on N64 that were not WCW. So my question to that is, I wonder if, because that was a claim that made the WWF Attitude game.
Yep.
When they released Hardcore Revolution, did they still have the need for the memory pack, memory card, whatever you want to call it? Or did they figure out, like, oh, crap, everybody else is just saving it to the system. We got to figure it out. But.
See, that I don't know because I did play the ECW. Well, I played one of the ECW games, but it was on PlayStation, so I had a memory card anyway. So I don't know. You'll have to do if we're going to do a deep dive on that one, you got to do some research and find out if they use memory cards for it.
I have to go and get ECW for the N64 now. Confirmed. All right. So another big thing that was in Revenge was the championship mode. So this was kind of like an arcade fighting. It wasn't a tournament because you didn't see who you were going to fight. At least not to the end. Like, if you knew that Hulk Hogan was, you made Hogan the champion in the game, you knew you were going to fight Hogan at the end. But along that journey, you didn't know who you were going to get. Whereas a tournament, you kind of know. But it was cool because you actually had the titles in there too, which was something kind of new. I mean, they had titles in other games, but not this many, not this much detail. And again, looking back at it now, it's nothing special. But at the time, it certainly was. And they had them all. They had the cruiserweight.
And they were all unique looking, yeah.
Yeah, they had the cruiserweight title, TV title, tag titles, U.S. title, and of course the World Heavyweight Championship. Had some unlockable characters in the game also. I remember, and I didn't write them down, Piper was the world champion.
Yep.
Canyon was the TV champion.
Mm-hmm. I remember them. I know them, by the way.
The Faces of Fear, and it's a damn tragedy that Ming and Barbarian, Haku, whatever you want to call them, did not get a world tag team title run. I don't think they did, because no. I don't know who. If it was a legitimate fight, who could have beaten Ming and Barbarian?
Small list, if anybody.
So U.S. and Cruiserweight, I don't recall those two. Was U.S. Raven?
No, U.S. was Kurt Hennig.
Oh, okay. And Cruiserweight, was it Dean Malenko?
That one I don't remember. Okay. That's the only one I can't remember. We'll have to look that up because there was a lot. I will say this. There was a lot of Cruiserweights in this game, and there were a lot of fun. I think Cruiserweights were probably my funnest to play with. Is that even a funnest?
Most fun.
Anyway, they were the most fun to thank you. They were the most fun to play with. I loved like playing as Rey Mysterio because he would do like by default like a moonsault off the top rope, which you know not everyone could do. So I thought I thought they played in there. They had the quick moves and stuff like that. So I thought Cruiserweights were a lot of fun to play with, and which I mean kind of you know mirrors what was going on in WCW at the time. They were always known for their Cruiserweight division, which for most of WCW was pretty awesome.
It was. I don't think anybody, even if you were not a WCW fan, if you were one of those, and they still exist, there are people that just like WWE, and there are people that will always hate WWE. But I think the Cruiserweight division was one of those things that even if you didn't like WCW, you'd look over and go, oh, that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool.
Well, and they tried replicating it in WWF back in the day, and they couldn't.
A couple times they tried to, and it just didn't work.
Well, they didn't really have the talent. They would bring in random luchadors, which is fine. I mean, the matches themselves weren't bad, but I don't know. I think two things made WCW a better place to watch we'll call them cruiserweight matches because that's what we know them as, is the ring size was smaller, so you had guys flying across the ring, and it just looked more exciting.
Yep.
And then the mat, the sound of the mat, and just the fact
the
that
ropes.
The ropes, yes, but I guess the ropes were tighter, so they didn't bend as much,
yep.
or you know, would give as much. But even the mat itself, the sound had a better snap to it, which is like known. Like if you go on like Reddit and just look on Squared Circle, and people always talk about, oh man, I love the sound of that WCW mat. And it's true, because it sounded amazing. Like if you took a bump on that, it sounded like you broke your back. But not only that, but I feel like the WCW mat didn't give as much. It didn't bounce as much.
I actually was thinking to myself, like I said, about an hour ago, I'm like, I love the WCW mat.
It was my favorite, to this day, my favorite wrestling ring of all time is the WCW wrestling
ring. WCW is number one, ECW is number two, because that had a lot of impact on it also. That sounded like somebody was going to break their arm or leg or back just from a body slam. It was insane. But I agree, the Cruiserweights in the game were very fun to play as. And we'll get into that when we reminisce more details about what we liked and disliked about the game. Another thing, I don't think the Cruiserweights were in this category. Do you recall the combo system? That there were a few characters that had a combination of strikes and grapple moves. I recall two of them. One of them...
I can recall two as well.
So you name one. Go ahead.
Goldberg.
Glacier.
Yeah, that was going to be my other one too.
I think Canyon also.
I think he did because he had that Marshall. And then I think Eric Bischoff actually had the combo system. Geez.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Honestly,
Eazy-E was. I would be more intimidated by Eazy-E's kickboxing than I would Shane McMahon's punches that we had to watch a couple years ago in WWE. They were bad.
Okay. So let's do a more apropos comparison then. In real life, who would you be more intimidated by in a fight, Eric Bischoff or Vince McMahon?
Oh, Vince McMahon.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I don't know what Vince is going to do.
It is fair, yeah. Well, and especially back, maybe now, because he's in his mid-70s, I probably wouldn't be a little very scared.
Okay, so
but
what
back
do,
in like
98?
98.
1998,
yeah.
Vince McMahon, 1998, Eric Bischoff.
See, against each other, I honestly would, there's always talk of like, remember when Bischoff at Slamboree called out Vince McMahon and he didn't show up?
That's another good name, by the way.
Slamboree, yes, I agree. Fantastic name. But everyone was like, oh, if Vince shows up, Eric, he's going to kick your ass. And he's like, oh, maybe, probably. But honestly, man, like, he was a trained martial artist, and I don't think Vince McMahon had any kind of training. I think he was a big guy, and maybe he knew how to fight, but I don't know, man. I feel like Eric Bischoff might actually hold his own against Vince McMahon.
I think you're right. I think everything you said was 100% right. It kind of goes, this is crazy, but hear me out. Those very, very, very early UFC fights.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking like the first year that they were around. You had guys that were just street fighters.
Mm-hmm.
Not the street fighters with that throw Hadoukens. That would be awesome. But
wouldn't it? Yeah.
Just the guys that were bar fighters. And then you had guys like Severin and Shamrock and, oh man, what's his name? He wore the, like, the formal fighting, like, G, whatever it's called.
Like Royce Gracie?
Yes.
Yeah. When Royce Gracie? Yeah.
When those guys came in, and you had the guys that looked more intimidating than them, but weren't trained, trying to go after them, knock them out really quick.
They get their asses kicked. Yeah. Because, I mean, yeah. And that's where, like...
Excuse me.
and that's where MMA has evolved, right? I mean, that's back in the day. It was just like you basically could have just picked two drunk guys at a bar and threw them in a cage, and that was what you had for the first 5 years of UFC.
Yeah.
And then they realized, oh, you know, shit, the whole idea is that you have these people that are professional fighters in these different disciplines,
yep.
You know, who's better? And then eventually they realize, well, you know what? There's something from each one that's really good. Let's go ahead and just kind of combine that into, you know, because now you have essentially it's MMA. So every single fighter specializes in at least one or two disciplines and will use both of those during a fight. And so you have certain fighters that are more skilled in boxing or wrestling or Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but they're not just focusing on that discipline. They're utilizing all of it to win. But again, that's still, even if it's not just one focus, it's still head and shoulders above what they were bringing out, mm-hmm. in like the early 90s UFC fights.
And I think that's an excellent point. I think Bischoff would have been able to hold his own against Vince in 98. Would he have beaten him or knocked him out? I don't know. But I'm just saying, if I'm getting in an argument with somebody and they're going to, you know, potentially rip my head off, I don't know what Vince would do.
And yeah, Vince, no, I think
Vince is a bigger guy.
Yeah. Vince is he's got the rage behind him, too. I feel like he's a guy that would get really mad.
Yeah. Bischoff might give me a roundhouse and knock me out. Vince might pick me up and throw me through the, you know, window of, like, Titan Towers or something. Who knows?
Right.
So the combo system, did you like that?
I don't think enough wrestlers had it to where, like, I'd be like, oh, that's really cool. I guess it was okay. I feel like that was one of those where they tried it out and it didn't really work out and they never really brought it back again. Well, I mean, they didn't. This was the last WCW game. But did they bring it back for any of the WWF hockey games? I don't think they did.
I don't recall it in WrestleMania or No Mercy. No. I mean, the only guy that I could think of would be Shamrock. And I'm pretty sure I played a Shamrock, at least in WrestleMania 2000. I'm not sure if he was in No Mercy.
He was unlockable in No Mercy.
Was he? Okay.
Yep. You could buy him.
I didn't particularly like the system. I think it made sense to give it to Glacier. I was disappointed when they gave it to Goldberg, but it was...
Yeah, because Goldberg really wasn't... I guess that was his whole gimmick, because they always said... I remember reading this in Eric Bischoff's book back in the day. Like, they said, oh, you just copied Stone Cold Steve Austin. He goes, well, actually... No, I was trying to copy Ken Shamrock, is really what he was going for.
Really?
Yeah, you didn't know that.
No.
So basically, he brought Goldberg in and, like, okay, cool. Well, you know, we're going to make this guy look like a legit, like, badass. His first comparison, that's why he wore the gloves, was because they wanted to compare to, like, Ken Shamrock as, like, a cage fighter.
Makes sense.
Yep.
Makes a lot of sense.
So I can understand why they might have given that to Goldberg, because he did try to do some sort of like MMA during his fights, you know, with the arm bars and things like that.
Leg lock. He had a rolling leg lock that was awesome.
Had a really good, actually a really good rolling leg lock. Yeah, I agree.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I can kind of see why they gave it to Goldberg. I don't know what, I mean, I guess Mortis as well, Canyon. Like, did he didn't really do a lot of martial arts, did he?
I think maybe as Mortis he did more so than Canyon.
Okay. But still, like... That was a weird one, I thought.
Canyon was
Glacier,
such...
honestly, Glacier is the only one that made sense. I'm sorry, I agree, though. Canyon,
such
amazing
a
wrestler.
Wrestler.
Yes, oh my God.
Such a shame. Terrible.
Yeah, oh, I agree.
Terrible thing. After I say this terrible thing, trying to move on, after we know. And for those that don't know, unfortunately, Canyon took his life a number of years ago.
Yep.
Moving on, the spirit meter. And a change that they had brought in from World Tour was your spirit meter, when it got up to a certain level in World Tour, it would just automatically go into the special mode. Here, it waited. You had the opportunity to delay it, which was good for strategy, because if your opponent was vertical and you went to go taunt, because that's how to activate it, it gave them the window to possibly attack. So if you want to knock them down, run away, that's a little thing that was changed. Stealing your opponent's special move, that was fun.
Yes, I had to look. I remember I learned how to do it, but only because I went to one of the cheat websites on like gamewinners.com to learn how to do it. And it was, I think, like when you grappled the wrestler, you hit A and B instead of the joystick.
Correct.
To do it, right? Yeah, that's okay.
And you could do it as anybody. So you could chokeslam the giant as Rey Mysterio.
Yes, because awesome. there was no weight classes in this particular Aki game.
There wasn't, but it would have been really easy to do so because they programmed, I almost call them Big Show. Paul Wright, Big Show, Giant, Captain Insano, whatever you want to call him. He, Nash, and I think Reese are the only guys that step over the top rope. So, I mean, It was kind of there, the weight class, but they didn't really go on about it.
Well, that was more height. That wasn't weight. That was height.
Yeah, but it could have. I'm just saying they did put some work into these guys being different.
I agree. And then their stance was, you know, kind of that brooding stance.
Been the stance for everybody. That, like, their hands were kind of in a fighting position, not like, hey, look, I got nothing in my hands. You know?
He's just holding your hands up.
Yeah, please tell you to stop, freeze. I got nothing in my hands. Are you showing me you got nothing in your hands? No, I'm just doing a WCW revenge pose.
Oh, my gosh.
Makes no sense.
They did. I agree. It was a little weird.
Yeah, that was that still strikes me as very weird, but it's kind of a funny, weird thing.
Well, and I think they fixed that in the WWF games, right?
They did, yes.
Okay, I thought
it wasn't as bad. But it's weird because you had, like you said, you had those guys in the game that had like the closed fits kind of thing. And I remember Raven had it too. So it wasn't just big guys. It was really random. Like, why did Raven have it?
Yeah, or it just, yeah, I agree. It just, I don't know what the logic was there by who stood a certain way or what have you. And you know what I did like, too, is we mentioned stealing finishers, but you could also steal taunts.
Yes.
And there were certain taunts that a wrestler would talk when you did them.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, if you played as Macho Man, for example, and he did his taunt, he would go, ooh, yeah, like that was his thing. But if you did somebody else doing his taunt, it would be a different sound effect.
I thought it didn't happen at all. So it would be another voice or just no voice at all?
No, it depends. Not everyone, but certain wrestlers would actually do their own voice. So did you know Goldberg had a voice in this game?
No, I didn't.
If you taunt as if you're facing Macho Man, or I saw it also with Rick Steiner, because Rick Steiner does like the whoo whoo, he barks, right? Yep. But if you do that as Goldberg, he's like rah rah.
Now like that he does his... now that you're saying it, I kind of remember stealing taunts as against Rick Steiner. I know Sting does it too, but his is like a very like ow, like
a, yeah, yes, like almost like
it's
a
bad.
Yeah. So, but you could do that. I think you do that. That same woo comes out when you're doing the Macho Man taunt or the Rick Steiner taunt. So, yeah. Yeah. Fun fact. Certain wrestlers have their own little voice.
And it's very funny to take somebody like Goldberg or Ming, some legitimate badass, and you steal Disco Inferno's taunt or Alex Wright. Saturday Night Fever. So the finishing moves in this game were another big improvement. They had finishing moves in World Tour. They were very easy to do. Same thing.
They didn't look accurate, though, man. That's one thing I remember playing. I'm like, this isn't like the jackknife powerbomb that Kevin Nash is supposed to be doing.
It was just a regular powerbomb, but...
It was a sit-down powerbomb, right?
I don't know if it was, but it was just a generic one. But even
I think so.
Bigger than that was, even before this, before World Tour, I remember playing WWF Raw, was it? Raw or Royal Rumble on Super Nintendo. And they were hidden. Like, you didn't know how to do a finishing move. And then Warzone and Attitude came out, and you had to remember how to freaking do an Hadouken to do Sweet Chin Music. It was ridiculous. And this was just get to the point, flip the joystick, strong grapple, flip the joystick again, done. That's it.
Yeah, I think this was, I agree, because I'm also thinking of the other WCW games like Nitro, which had, you know, the original one came out on the PlayStation before this, and I remember, like, I couldn't figure out how to do a finishing move, and I had to look it up. It was just not easy to do, whereas, yeah, this was, like, the easiest one to do, and so, and not only that, but again, like, you know, Revenge had more accurate looking finishers,
yep,
compared to World Tour, but also like the, I don't know if it was the sound or just the animation, but the impact just looks so much more powerful. It's like to this day, I look at some of those moves they did, I'm like, oh, that looks brutal. There's okay. So, in your opinion, what were the most brutal looking finishers in Revenge?
Well, I could tell you the first move I ever did in Revenge.
Okay.
All right. That's weird because when we talked on the wrestling video, wrestling and or video game podcast, I think we had mentioned, like, do you remember playing it for the first time? I'm fairly certain I mentioned, I remember me and you getting the TNA game in college, and our first match was Samoa Joe and Sting.
Yep.
I don't know how I remember. Well, I do know how I remember. You know, we were in college and best friends, and it was a brand new game. We waited a while for it to come out. When I booted up Revenge a couple of weeks ago, and actually booted up, not emulator, I actually got the system, found a way to freaking get this thing to hook up because it doesn't work on newer TVs. So you got to get a converter and da-da-da-da-da. But it's not bad. You can get them off Amazon for like $10. But when I booted it up, I had this flashback of first match I did was Goldberg. I picked Goldberg.
Okay.
And his running move is just a spear. And I remember going, whoa! Like,
I got my finisher already.
Yeah, I'm like, wow. Because, man, coming from Warzone and Attitude, forget it. You're, jeez, that game was just terrible. Terrible. There was not much good in that game. I'm sorry, I really don't like them. And even with the ECW ones, as much as I freaking sugarcoat it, it's still the same crap. It's not,
yeah,
it's not that good. But I could justify it for ECW because less budget, less promotions, less money than WWF. But I do remember doing the spear for the first time and going, whoa, that, first of all, I did it. Second of all, it's a regular move. And then third, that shit looks like it hurts. So I remember, yep. I mean, that's not even a finishing move. It's a regular move. It looked vicious. I know which one you're going to say, so I'm not going to mention it. The jackhammer looked brutal. Saturn's, yep, Death Valley driver was brutal also.
Yep.
I remember playing as him a lot. And I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. Raven's even flow was fantastic also.
Yes.
And then, anybody else? No, I saw I got for right now. Go ahead. Give it to me. I know what you're going to say, Big Papa Pump.
I wasn't going to say Big Papa Pump.
I thought you were. Sinus
screwdriver? It was brutal, but no, wow. I'm surprised.
I purposely did not mention that.
No, I was like, oh, you know what it was? That's interesting. I'm curious now what you thought it was. So no, it was not the Steiner screwdriver. To be honest, I forgot that was his finisher in the game because I never used him. No, there were two moves that I felt just looked the most brutal, with an honorable mention going to the Kevin Nash jackknife powerbomb, which again, it's a basic powerbomb, but the way he just drops him and you see him kind of bounce off the mat a little bit. But no, top two most brutal looking finishers in that game.
Can I interrupt before you give those? Because
yes,
full disclosure, we're recording on a Wednesday and I have AEW on the background and the Ocho, Le Champion, just came out. Jericho.
Oh,
the Lion Tamer in this game is brutal. The Lion Tamer in Revenge is brutal.
Well, that's what it used to look like back in the day before he went to WWE.
Before it became a Boston Crab.
Well, supposedly, I was going to say, like, Chris Jericho himself has said, like, there are two different moves. The Walls of Jericho is not the Lion Tamer. They are two separate moves. He has clarified.
Yes,
that.
He has.
Because he couldn't pick up the bigger guys in WWF.
Yeah, and I don't think Steve Austin would get the hell off me.
No.
There's
you think of guys that like looked normal size in WWF, but you put them against Chris Jericho and then all of a sudden they're towering over him. It's like, yeah, you're not going to get those legs
He's
up.
He's not going to get Taker in that.
No, God, no. But, you know, Boston Crab, a little bit easier to work with.
Yes.
So anyway, no. Okay. So my favorite two in neither order, they're both equally awesome in my opinion. One was the Diamond Cutter, DDP.
Oh, man, that's such a great move. And all the variations.
And you know what? That was really cool about it is you could do it from everywhere. Every single position. Well, not every single. Like, you had to be standing up at least. But you could do it off of the turnbuckle. You could do it from behind. You could do it in the front. You could do it as an Irish whip rebound where you pop him up and then hit him with a diamond cutter. You could hit it from anywhere, and it just looked brutal.
And that went with the character of DDP because
yes,
at the start of Halloween Havoc 98, they're like, oh, it's the brute strength of Goldberg versus the unpredictability of the diamond cutter. He can get it from any angle. And
from any
this
angle.
Game made you feel like you were DDP.
Yes. Well, I think most of the wrestlers in that game, you had that feeling of playing as, you know, before I get to my other favorite Impact finisher, the other wrestler that, again, made me feel like I was playing as him was Booker T. Because okay. He had a lot of unique moves in this game as far as his I love Booker T. In general. I think he's a fantastic wrestler. And now that I've been rewatching him on Reliving the War, the YouTube show, I really feel like he may be one of my favorite from WCW. And he just one of the coolest movesets ever. He was so unique in what he did. And so anyway, just a lot of his moves. And the fact that, honestly, I didn't know how to do it at first, and now I know how to do it. But like, you could do a Spin-a-Rooney in Revenge.
Oh, yeah, you can. Absolutely.
You have to have your special up, and then like I think if you like fall down or get knocked down, you spin a Rooney back up into your standing position.
He had
whatever.
The Harlem Hangover in the game. I don't know if that was a regular move off the top rope or...
That was his... Well, because that was the thing. You could have a special from different things.
Oh, yeah.
So his special was the Harlem Hangover, I think was... Was it a special or was it just his diving move?
I don't know.
That's a good point. I can't remember.
But it's in the game.
It is in the game. And then, of course, he has his axe kick, which I've always loved. Anyway, so my other favorite move, this is my absolute favorite move, and I use it all the time because it's my favorite wrestler to play as in that game, Glacier's cryonic kick.
Really?
Because you hit that, it's not just a super kick. You kick that guy in the face and literally is lifted off the ground.
Really?
And flies back, and more often than not will get you into like knockout territory where like you've knocked him out.
Very Sub-Zero-esque.
Yes.
Finish him.
So Glacier, because of this game, has gone down as one of my favorite wrestlers of all time.
All right. There you have it. Maybe we should just end it right there. One of his favorite wrestlers of all time is Glacier. Glacier was different. He was unique.
He's awesome, man. He had one of the coolest movesets. I don't care what anyone says that he was a Sub-Zero ripoff. I don't care. I love Mortal Kombat. So if someone's going to copy a video game to be a wrestling character, I am so glad they went with Mortal Kombat.
What about Mortis Canyon as a reptile?
Was it reptile or was it supposed to be scorpion because of all the skulls?
Let's say he's a little bit of both.
Because he was like supposed to be his rival, right? Whereas like Scorpion versus Sub-Zero, that was like the whole kind of gimmick of it. And then you had Wrath, who was like, I think he was more like Reptile because he showed up later.
Well, we'll get into Wrath in a moment.
Yes, we will. That's right.
So a lot of finishing moves, different variations. Another good one I'll just mention quick is the Buff Blockbuster. That was like a legit finishing move from the corner. That was very cool that Buff Bagwell did. We talked about the entrances. They did change, you know, when they came out, you had what was presented as the full stage, but when it cut to the match, it was downgraded. It was more than likely because of the amount of memory that was needed. But
yeah, I don't think it detracted from anything.
No, not at all. But did you know, fun fact, did you know if you are fighting in the aisles, or aisle, there's only one aisle, and you Irish whip your opponent towards the entrance, and they go through the curtain... They'll disappear and come back, but sometimes they'll have a weapon.
I did not know that. Did you actually know that, or is that something you found out during research?
I completely forgot. Found it in my research. I go, I remember. So that was something I...
I don't think I ever tried it, to be honest with you.
I don't think so either.
I do love that regardless of the match, you could go under the ring and pick up a weapon of some kind.
I wasn't under the... I don't think it was under the ring. I think it was in the crowd.
Was it in the crowd? You're right. It was in the crowd. You reach over to the crowd and get a weapon.
Yep.
But, and I remember there was a stop sign. There was a baseball bat. I think there was
a chair.
A chair, a trash can. That might have been it.
And
but
and La Parca started the match with weapons.
They started with weapons. And that's why I always love Sting, too, because you start off with a bat. So you had a big advantage there. But it was no DQ. You couldn't get DQ'd in this game.
Unless you dropped it, and then it just disappeared in the thin air.
Yes, and it didn't break either.
That's,
so, like, as long
stuck.
As you held on to it.
That I didn't like.
But you go get another weapon.
Yeah. It's the idea of it.
That's fair.
Not the end of the world. But another thing they added, which was great, the 40-man battle / Royal Rumble. You get up to 40 guys. That was a lot of fun. I know I spent a lot of time with friends doing that. But, again, I'm an ECW guy. I made them fatal four-ways or four-way dances as well, because you could turn off over-the-top rope eliminations. That was one of the downfalls of the game, was there weren't a lot of match types. You had the single, the tag, the handicap, the battle royal, the legit battle royal, Royal Rumble. And then, you know, if you turn it off and tweak the settings, you can have a fatal four-way. Speaking of the battle royal, do you remember when Sting came in the match, he came from the rafters?
I feel like it's one of those things where, like, again, you said it, and then I remembered it. So, like, thinking about it back, I forgot, but I do remember that. Didn't he also do that when he would come and interfere in a match, too, though? Or am I just thinking because he would do that in real life?
No, I think he does it in the intro to World Tour. That might be what you're thinking of.
That might be. Okay. So, but I do remember, yes. Yeah, so he would come down, when he would come out to the ring, he would come from the rafters, yeah. Which was awesome.
That is cool. So here's the thing that blew my mind in my research.
Okay.
I can't confirm this because I found this so quick to us recording. I didn't have time to check another source. I've not tried it on the system. I will this weekend when I boot it up just for shits and giggles. I read, and if this is incorrect, do not come at me because I'm just reading what I saw online. I read a report that if you hit the Z button during the Battle Royal, the CPU would take over your character. Like if you don't want to play for a little bit. If you got that.
Have you tried? So you haven't tried it yet?
No, I found this out today. So okay. I don't have the game where I am currently located. So I will where I am going to be this weekend, the game is currently at. So I will give that a shot. So I found that out today. So don't come at me if that is incorrect. But what I do know is correct, 60-plus wrestlers, and a lot of these guys in Revenge, the big names that were in it were not in World Tour. Bret Hart, Goldberg, Roddy Piper, Harlem Heat, Bulldog, Jim Neidhart, Conan, that's a joke, Conan, Kurt Hennig, Chris Jericho, Raven, and Saturn. So you got a little bit of everything. You got some new guys. Homegrown, like Goldberg and Harlem Heat. You got Neidhart, Bulldog, Bret Hart from the WWF. You have, you know, territory guys like Kurt Hennig, who were in the AWA and whatnot. Guys from Mexico. I mean, there's tons of luchadors in this game. Conan, Juventud Guerrera. And then you got some ECW guys like Raven and Saturn. So a little bit of everything. Very diverse group.
I'm trying to think. I mean, I feel like this may have been the most overall complete roster that represented a time that a wrestling game came out. I mean, even to this day.
We're going to get to that in a moment. We're going to get to that in a little bit. There's a big question. I got a big question for you at the end.
Okay.
Speaking of characters, though, EWF, DAW were original wrestlers in this game. Original, in air quotes. But a lot of them were based off of New Japan, All Japan wrestlers, such as Dr. Death Steve Williams, Hayabusa, and Kenta Kobashi, if I'm pronouncing his name wrong. Again, my bad. But you were a fan of some of those wrestlers, were you not?
I was. At the time, they were a lot of fun. I think it's funny because we were just talking before about the combos, and I think there was one of these original wrestlers that used the combo system. I think it was
Kimchi.
It wasn't Kimchi. There's another one, I think, then.
What?
I was going to say, I think it was Hanzoman, the ninja-looking guy.
I think that's Otani, the ninja-looking guy.
Oh, maybe. I don't know Japanese wrestlers, though. It's ignorant, but I don't really know any Japanese wrestlers.
It's okay. I just read it online. That's the reason.
Oh, okay. So, but yes. So I know there were others. Honestly, I'm trying to think who my favorite was to play as far as the weird ones.
It's probably the one that's the TV champion in my game.
Who is that? Do you remember?
I think it's Kimchi. That's why I said it.
I was going to say, I think it was Kimchi because he had a really devastating looking.
That guy. He made like sounds the entire time he fought.
He was awesome. And then actually, you know who I really loved too was Aki Man.
I've seen people do taunts. I've seen GIFs of indie wrestlers doing those taunts where he does like the spinning Hulk Hogan pose. Oh, it's great.
Yes. Well, but I remember his finishing move being pretty good too, right? I'm trying to think of what it was, but I remember it was like a...
It was pretty crazy.
He picked you up and he'd spin around and he did something, but anyway.
So, yes or no? Isn't AEW Fight Forever being made by THQ?
Yes.
Or published by THQ? You think THQ Man's going to be in the game?
I think that would be amazing if he was. It'd be a fantastic
Kenny Omega's back. Got his fingerprints all over this game. I think there's a very high probability THQ Man's in this game. If not, then he'll be some sort of like easily created wrestler.
Yes, like a, like you can just add his outfit, because you could do that. And I remember WWF No Mercy had his costume in there, so you could create your own version of him.
That's great. Speaking of creating, there was no creative wrestler in this, but the foundation was there. You were able to, and I had a lot of fun with this, alter the superstars in the game. Superstars. This isn't WWE. Superstars, as Joey Styles would say. The wrestlers. Because they're wrestlers in a wrestling ring, and that's what wrestlers do. That was a funny Drew McIntyre promo.
Yes.
You could change things, which was really cool, and you could do things like you can give them other people's attires and kind of tweak it. Like, I would make Macho Man, I would give him, like, his Mega Powers-esque, you know, his short tights. Hogan, yep. You were able to give Hogan his yellow and red, but you could tweak it. You can make it, you know, NWO colors. You can give somebody Wolfpack colors or Hollywood Hogan NWO colors. It was pretty cool. Surfer Sting, I would always change his colors, like every time I booted up the game. It was very fun.
Well, that's something we haven't talked about. So, like, all these wrestlers each had their own, they had four attire slots, essentially.
That's a lot.
Some of them were just different colors for their main, like, outfits. But some of them, like Scott Steiner and Sting and Hulk Hogan and Macho Man even, were, like, previous gimmicks. Like, in Sting's case, you had Crow Sting, but then you also had Surfer Sting.
And Wolfpack Sting.
And Wolfpack Sting. And then Hogan had his red and yellow Hogan as an alternate attire. Scott Steiner, you know, he had his bleach blonde goatee look that he was rocking at the time. But then one of his alternates is him with the brown hair as the Steiner brothers.
Yep.
Scott Steiner. So you could do like a tag team match with Rick and Scott Steiner and didn't feel like you were having a pair up NWO Scott Steiner with Rick Steiner, which wouldn't have made sense at the time. I'm trying to think of other wrestlers who had that much of a distinction between their outfits. Those are
you
the
know what
that
was
a
weird thing in the game? I thought was very strange.
What's that?
They had Lex Luger's Made in the USA outfit in the game, and it wasn't assigned to anybody.
Really?
But it was in the game. Yes,
you could add it to him later.
Yeah,
I legit never knew that, or if I did, I don't remember it.
Yeah, I forgot about it in the research. I remember that, but Luger, I was one of the first guys because at the time with the Wolfpack, he was wearing the jeans. I didn't like that.
Yeah,
stupid.
No. Well, that was that his main outfit? I think I'd change it too because he had the trunks as his alternate.
Yeah, I think he had the jeans as his default, but I changed. That was one of the first things I remember changing in the game. Another thing was, and WWF did this in WrestleMania 2000, and definitely No Mercy, but I'm not sure if they did it in 2000, but multiple characters or alternate egos in the same character. Like you had Canyon, then you would hit the C button.
C down. It was C down. I remember that.
To change the character the way they looked. And, and it would be Mortis. And then back to Canyon and back to Mortis. So I remember they did that in a WWF game where you had like Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, Michael Cole, like Earl Hebb. They're all in one spot.
I know
No
Mercy did that.
Yeah.
Yep. It would save us. I guess it would save because it makes sense. You weren't expecting them to have a unique move set or whatever. So it made sense for them to basically just be four attire slots for one character and save on, I assume that probably saved on memory.
Oh, yeah. Definitely did. Definitely did.
I'm trying to think, though, in Revenge, other than Mortis and Canyon, was there anyone else that had that alter ego or alternate character swap?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think what you said was probably the closest thing was just gimmick changes. Like, not, like, fully different like Mortis, but, you know, you said the Steiners, you know, the Steiner brothers, Hogan.
I remember one that was interesting. It wasn't a gimmick change, but like Scott Norton, one of his alternate attires had a shaved head.
Did it? Oh, it did. Yeah.
Because I'm wondering, is that when he was in Japan or did he shave his head in WCW? I just can't remember.
I can't remember. I really can't.
Okay.
I remember he was with Buff Bagwell for a while.
He was. The Vicious and Delicious. That was like most of 97 that they were a team.
Underrated.
Because, oh my God, they're fantastic.
Very, very underrated. Mm-hmm. So now we're going to go into a little bit of the changes and removals from the game. There was actually not a lot. I think the glaring issue in this game, not glaring issue, one of the glaring omissions in the game was Ric Flair. So Flair was...
Yes.
And that's not fair to Flair. It is not fair to Flair that he was not in this game. So Flair was fired for no-showing WCW Thunder early in its infancy. If my memory serves me correct, one of his kids had a wrestling tournament and he didn't want to go to a B show. So he was fired, and that was when the development of the game was happening. And then he got hired back, but it was in the later stages of the game, so he wasn't able to be in it. But I did this. A lot of my friends did this. Let me know if you've heard of this or you did it yourself. A lot of people, when I was a kid at least, would take Finley.
Yes! Yes, I did. And I gave him Larry Zbysko's
yes!
tights.
And you just made it like purple or red, and then there you go. Yes! There's Ric Flair.
He's like, oh, he's looking a little more barrel-chested, and by God, he knows how to do a tombstone pile driver now, but that's Ric Flair, all right. I did it with other wrestlers, too, though. So I made, what was his name? Maya Inkaboy, one of the weird ones, like the fake ones. He kind of had a weird eyebrow raise, so he became the Rock for me.
Mayan Inkaboy, I'm trying to think.
So he was like a darker-skinned dude. He had sunglasses on. He had a goatee, so that was the only thing that kind of threw you off. But he had like an eyebrow raise going on, and he had like tattoos and green shorts for his man attire. But then he could change that, and it, of course, no more tattoos. And so I just gave him like generic trunks, so he was the Rock.
Gotcha.
And then I remember, I'm trying to think. I think it might have been Sick Boy. No, was it Sick Boy? No, who was the one that didn't have the eye patch? It was Sick Boy, right?
Riggs.
Was it,
Scotty yeah. Riggs.
No, Riggs had the eye patch.
Yeah, Scotty Riggs.
Sick Boy. Yeah, so I'm saying Sick Boy, the one who didn't have the eye patch, I would make into Triple H.
Really? Okay.
And then, yeah.
All right.
So I would just do like little things like that. But I remember the main one was Ric Flair. I would turn Finley. I'm sorry. I got a big smile on my face because that's hilarious that I'm not the only one who thought
did
of that.
Did you change characters' names? Like, I
of course.
Like, Giant Big Show in the game.
I didn't do anything like cool, normal like that. I remember I specifically remember this because I took Lex Luger, and for one of his alternate outfits, I think I gave him pink pants and I called him Flexi Lexi. And then because that's when I was playing the game, that's what Hulk Hogan would call him at the time. And then I remember I gave him like one of these weird outfits that I think Dake Ken had. And I called him Lex the Golfing Wrestler because it looks like he's wearing a golf outfit. Just stupid stuff like that. And so I'm trying to think of, and then I remember I had one like where I gave Kevin Nash like a t-shirt and jeans. I call him Coach Kevin because, you know, when I was watching WCW, he kind of came like a coach of some of the younger wrestlers in, as his gimmick.
I'm sorry.
I called him Coach Kevin.
If you just heard my phone hit the table, I apologize. I think that happened twice.
Oh, you're
well,
good.
I'm saying that because my phone is blowing up because, again, as we are recording this, I'm a huge Yankee fan, and Aaron Judge just broke the home run record that was he was tied with Babe Ruth. So,
who did Aaron Judge
yes,
did?
He just hit number.
Oh, nice!
He just, according to my text messages, he just hit number 61 as we are recording this. So now, not only do you know the day we were recording this, you know the time we're recording this.
Yes.
So, I'll never forget. Where were you? If I ever have a kid one day, Dad, where were you when Aaron Judge beat Babe Ruth? Well, son, I was recording what was called a podcast.
With your Uncle Dan.
Yeah, and now, what's a podcast?
You don't think podcasts will be around when our grandkids are older?
I have no idea. Who the hell knows? Everything changes so quick. VHS sounds like an STD now.
It really does, yeah.
I got a case of the VHS.
There is a cure. It's called DVD.
Yeah.
Which, in and of itself, sounds like a different STD.
Okay.
So was Ric Flair the only one that wasn't in the game?
Wrath. You mentioned Wrath before with Glacier and Canyon / Mortis. So he was in the game. Nobody really knows why he was removed. He is in the data of the game. You got to use a cheat device. I've seen photos of him. You can tell that the face resembles him, but he has Sting's like singlet like turned all black. I don't know if that's just what people assigned him, or it was a placeholder for him, but he was in the game, but he was taken out. I mean,
interesting.
I don't really know why. Nobody seems to really know why, because he was at Halloween Havoc 98. I watched him. He fought Meng, and it was all right. And there was nothing to write home about, but he's not in the game. And
so I just Googled him. I just Googled Wrath, and actually that is Brian Adams or Brian Clark's face.
Brian Clark is Wrath.
Or Brian Adams, excuse me. It's Brian Adams' face with Sting's outfit.
That's weird, right?
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's very weird.
Very weird.
But I guess he's got a moveset that's unique. I never used him. I never had a Game Shark for
Did you ever have a Game Shark in general?
I did, for the PlayStation 1, actually. And I'm trying to think if I ever used it. The only time I used it was when I would play Tekken 3. I would use it to unlock all the characters.
Cheater. It's okay.
I'm not cheating. I got there faster. There are certain characters that I... So, like, with Tekken 3, you would unlock characters by beating arcade mode, which was fun. That was fun. But there were certain characters you could only unlock in other modes of the game that I didn't play as much, and so I just didn't... I couldn't be bothered. So, I'm like, I'm just going to unlock these characters.
I remember renting Game Shark, but I don't really... I never owned it, but I do remember trying to figure out what the heck to do. And if you didn't have, like, that book of codes or find a way to know what you were doing, it was rather difficult. But
yeah,
finishing up this part here with the development changes and removals, they did remove the tournament mode that was in World Tour, but that was replaced by the championship mode. But you really couldn't do it. You couldn't do the championship mode with two players unless it was in the tag team, so you couldn't do any type of tournament. Considering all the things that were put into it, if the worst thing that was taken out of World Tour and not put in Revenge was tournament mode, I don't think anybody would have a really big issue with it.
Well, and that's the thing. You can make a tournament yourself, right? You don't need to have that be in the game. You can make your own bracket and then just play it as such, right? I mean, I agree. I don't think that's a huge omission.
I agree. I don't think that was a big deal at all, but I just wanted to let everybody know. So here we go. Discussion, memories, you know, all the good stuff. You know, I want you to, you know, I want to be a polite host. Ha.
Okay.
What are your memories? When you think of WCW Revenge, what do you think of?
So I can tell you exactly what I think of, because I remember who I got it from. My neighbor, Shane, who we had just gotten a Nintendo 64, and he let us borrow the game. We had played it at his house first, and I said, this is amazing, because we don't really play it if you want to borrow it. And I said, yeah, sure. Borrowing it ended up being keeping it, like we never gave it back. But this was in 2000, because I remember I had already been watching WCW, but it was 2000, so a lot of the wrestlers that were in this game, I didn't know who they were, because they weren't in WCW anymore. And so, like, I thought it was really weird that Chris Jericho, this WWF wrestler, was in a WCW game. I had no idea Jericho was in WCW when I played this game. Like, zero idea, because by the time I got into it on, you know, watching it on TV, he was gone.
So did it blow your mind?
I was really confused. I was like, so on the flip side, I remember watching Chris Benoit in WCW, and then I remember he went away, and then I remember the next time I watched it, or, you know, Chris Benoit was over on the WWF. I'm like, what's going on? This is really weird. Why is this happening? So anyway, I remember playing with my brothers, and I remember I would get so pissed at my one brother, Adam, because he would play as DDP, and all he would do in every match is spam the running punch button.
I remember you telling me.
Because with DDP, oh my God, I don't know if it was a forearm or if it was a legit punch. I can't tell from the animation, but if you hit that enough in a row, you would legit knock out the wrestler, and you wouldn't have to hit a single finisher. You wouldn't have to pin the guy. He would be knocked out. And so it was the easiest way. It was the easiest and it was the cheapest way to win, because it was just like you couldn't really avoid it. Like, anytime I went to, like, try to land some offense, he would run at me with that freaking punch, and I couldn't, I could block it, I guess. I didn't think about that. But still, like, it sucked. Like, I think we made a rule, like, no running at somebody is DDP. I think we had to make that a house rule, because that's how stupid it was. That was, like, you could just win that easily. And then I remember we would always play the Battle Royals, like you mentioned, the 40-man Battle Royals. And what I liked about them, too, it wasn't like a traditional Royal Rumble. Like, once the guy was thrown out of the ring, the next guy came in, so it kept moving. And then if you had multiple guys knocked out at the same time, you would have multiple wrestlers running into the ring. And remember, they would zoom in on their face when they're running in the ring, and it just looked really creepy.
Yep.
They would get in the ring. And so I remember doing that. I remember the easiest way to win those battle royals was you throw the guy on the outside of the apron, and then you just do a running, you just run into the ropes, and it bounces him off the fence.
Yep.
And that's how you knocked him
out.
That
was cool, too. That was something I think I overlooked in this, was that little piece of the game.
The animation?
The getting thrown from the apron of the ring and landing on the guardrail, and the sound. It sounded brutal.
It did. Well, everything, the sound effects in this game, man, were, I mean, top notch. Like, it just sounded great. It looked, for the time, looked great. So those are probably my big memories of playing it. It was always with my brothers. We would usually do one-on-one matches. I didn't really do a lot of tag matches. I wasn't a huge fan of them. I honestly never have been a huge fan of tag team wrestling matches. They're just not my cup of tea. But the singles matches were great. Again, I always use Glacier. I thought he was awesome. And like you, I'm like, wait, Goldberg just does his spear? Like, I don't think it, like, blew my mind as much. But, like, the fact that you could – I think what I loved is I wanted to play a game as Goldberg where it would be, like, real life where he could just win a match in 2 minutes and just get his finisher. There were other games where, like, you had to wear down their health in order to pull off a finisher. I think Nitro was one of them. Whereas this one, like, you could theoretically just taunt until you got your special up and hit one spear and a jackhammer. And it almost felt like you were playing a TV show match. So I thought that was really cool. Other than that, I'm trying to think. I remember I was really confused that Hulk Hogan and Ultimo Dragon had the same taunt. I was like, why is Ultimo Dragon doing
that?
Yes,
that was kind of weird that Ultimo Dragon would do that back in the day.
Did he do that in real life? He did. Okay. So and I wasn't watching at the time. I remember there was a Rowdy Piper did a really weird hopping taunt, which I didn't understand what it was until I watched Reliving the War, and it was to show that he could jump on his one leg that had hip surgery. That was the only reason that taunt was in that game.
And then he was crazy.
So I remember that. And then he was nuts. That's how I knew him. He was crazy. So those are probably my big memories from that game. I do remember making Booker T world champion at one point because he was world champion on WCW TV at the time that I was watching. Yeah. I mean, just all in all, a fantastic, fantastic game.
I agree with a lot of what you said. I did do a lot of tag matches with friends. And the big thing was in 98, first of all, I thought this game came out a little bit earlier. I had my years off when I was doing the research. I thought World Tour was 96 and this was 97 because I had forgotten about the Wolfpack and everything.
Yep.
So I had my years off a little bit. This was getting towards the down. I don't want to say downward spiral in 99. I think WCW was a downward spiral in 2000 when Russo kind of came on board. But things were...
That kind of started in 99.
Yeah,
though,
it started in 99, but it got bad, in my opinion, in 2000. So I was a little surprised that this came out so close to when it started to go downhill. But the thing was, it was so hot. Like, wrestling was so hot. Everything NWO, Steve Austin, that little rebel group out of Philly. Everything was so freaking red hot. Everybody I knew liked it. You know, I played sports. I was in basketball. I was in baseball. And then, you know, you had the guys that were really into it. And then the surprising thing was, even if you weren't into wrestling, a lot of guys had N64 for the sports games and whatnot. I mean, I felt like I was one of those kids that fit in with both. I mean, I would sit there and I would play. You know, I had Ken Griffey Jr. Baseball. I had Madden on N64 also. Had the wrestling games, obviously. And then there would be the ones that wanted to play the fantasy games. Like, I consider Mario a fantasy game and stuff like that. Star Fox. So, if you were just into sports, you still played this game. If you were just into Mario and Star Fox and stuff like that, you still played this game. Maybe you didn't own it, but you still played it. Everybody.
Well, that was me. Like, I didn't play sports games, but I played fighting games, and that's what this felt like to me. It was a fighting game.
Everybody played this game. And that's the difference between, I feel, and maybe it was just my friends, maybe it was just our age bracket. This and WrestleMania 2000 were the peak. Now, I'm not saying that No Mercy is not a better game. That's everybody has their own opinion on it. But for my bubble, my age group, this was it. Revenge and WrestleMania were the two games that absolutely everybody played. And, you know, there's something about this game that when I booted up, it's the reason why we do these shows. Whether it's the YouTube thing that we're starting now, the podcast itself, this is the general idea of us doing these is a retrospective. So when I turned on that game, without even looking at anything in detail, just watching the intro where they have Ming as the truck driver, as you pointed out in the intro.
Yeah.
Just watching that and the flood of memories of NWO and Hogan and Goldberg and DDP and all that stuff. That's one part of it. Playing it, that's the second part of it. Like, oh, I remember playing it. Actually, my friend Dan, not you, Dan, and not the other Dan that's on our shows, another Dan. Like, seriously, my entire life has been with Dan's. I thought I would eventually marry a Danielle. So, just playing it, I get the flood of emotions of those, you know, 98, 99 years. And then something like, wow, I completely forgot about this. When you do the championship mode, you get a high score and you put in your name.
You do, that's
Talk
right.
about a friggin' time capsule. When I look through those names, and I have people from middle school, people from high school, people I hung out with once or twice, and their names in my game, goddamn, that is a time capsule. And that is why I'm more devoted to Revenge and WrestleMania 2000 than I am No Mercy, because once I got in high school, I was like, I really don't want to play N64 anymore. You know, what else is going on? So that was my memory of it. And it's one of the strongest, if not the strongest, memory I have for a video game. So that
I will say, I mean, between this one and No Mercy, I do feel No Mercy was the superior game overall, but I did not play that with my brothers. Like, this is the game that I played with my brothers all the time. By the time No Mercy came out and I actually played it, I played it by myself. It was great, but my brothers weren't really into it at that point. So that was all me. And then I think you and I played it eventually as well. But as far as with my own family growing up, Revenge was the pinnacle. And then I remember playing WrestleMania 2000 at my friend's house, another friend's house in middle school, and I thought it was great. I remember my first match, I was China, just because I thought it was really cool that you could be a chick in a game and beat up dudes. And she had that low blow you could use, you know. Yeah, I think I played that game before I played Revenge, funnily enough. And I loved it. I thought it was awesome. This is amazing. And then I played Revenge. I'm like, this plays a lot like that WrestleMania game for some reason, even though it's a different company. What's that all about?
Strange.
This is crazy. But no, man, fantastic memories. As far as if I were to ever get another N64, or if I'm playing on an emulator, there's very few games I will go back and feel like I would legitimately enjoy on the Nintendo 64. This is easily one of those games, though, that I would thoroughly have a great time going back and playing it again.
I agree with you. So jumping into our next section of this, what did you like about the game? What did you dislike? Is there anything that you recall that you didn't like, or just you felt like even for back in the day they could have done?
We've been definitely talking about, you know, a lot of what we loved about it. So, I mean, there's not much more to say on that. I mean, the gameplay was crisp. The presentation was amazing. The sound effects were on point. The roster, you really can't complain about the roster. Honestly, the only thing I feel like was lacking, and I feel like it's just because it really wasn't, you know, popular at the time, was like the create a wrestler mode. You couldn't create your own wrestler. Mm-hmm. You could do like the attire, you know, swap and customization as far as colors and things like that, but it was still the guys that were in the game. Even though you could change their names, it was still the guys that were in the game. You couldn't make a separate slot, and that's where I think No Mercy especially, I think WWF had it, but I never did it on WWF, but, you know, No Mercy, I think, really had that true create a wrestler, bring them into the game. So that's probably the only thing I feel like was lacking. Everything else that they left out, whether it was entrance music or whatever, you know, I don't really care about. Like, to me, it was just such a perfect wrestling game that none of that other stuff really mattered. They got everything right that they were supposed to get right. And so whatever they left out, I gave a pass to, including for that matter, the create a wrestler mode. It's more so if I had to pick something they could add, that would be the only thing.
I agree with everything you said. My one addition is that I really liked was the instant replay. I thought that was awesome.
Yes. Oh yeah. We didn't even talk about that. You could, like, as soon as you hit the guy, like if you hit like a really good clothesline or a boot to the face, it would replay. And then certain times you would hit a generic wrestling move. It would do that. In addition to like your finishers, it would always do a replay.
Yep. And then after the match, it would show you like the last 20 seconds, 15 seconds, whatever it was,
like how you won the match,
which was really cool. The music thing, that does bother me because, like, you know, you had the factions in the game. You have NWO Hollywood, Wolfpack, Raven's Flock, which had been broken up at the time because in Halloween Havoc 98, they mentioned that the Flock is disbanded.
Yep.
You could have had literally everybody in NWO Hollywood, NWO music. Everybody in the Wolfpack, Wolfpack music. Everybody in Raven's Flock, Raven's thing. And then even if you went with... you're in WCW and you get the generic Nitro music. I felt like it could have been.
That's true.
Yep.
That's a good point. I think they did that for, actually, I believe it was WCW Thunder, or, yeah, it was Thunder on the PlayStation, where you had those video entrances, and not everyone had their own music. Some wrestlers did.
That's inexcusable but if not, on a PlayStation console.
Oh, I would agree. Yeah, certainly a lot more memory. You should have had more music, but it could have been a licensing issue for all we know. I don't know. But no, I agree. I think they probably could have, you know, honestly, I feel like they could have, you know, done without a few of the wrestlers in like the fictional federations if they could have used that memory for music instead. I don't know how development works. I don't know if those are even like interchangeable, but if taking out some of those fake wrestlers meant you could get some of that music, yes, I think that would have definitely added an extra layer. It wasn't a game breaking thing for me, but I can definitely see not having it versus, especially in future games on this engine, having that feature. I can understand why it would have been nice to have.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I'm agreeing with you a lot about this stuff. But we both think it's a great game. And then, you know, there's not much to complain about. I think it still holds up. So what's your thoughts on the legacy of this? When you look back at this, you know, 20 some odd years plus later, what do you think when you think of Revenge? What do you think of, you know, if and when eventually you boot it up, like, what do you think this legacy is of this game to you and then just to the wrestling audience and video game enthusiasts as well?
So I think you kind of hit the nail on the head earlier when you were talking about how AEW is putting out a game and they're using this as essentially kind of the blueprint for how they want it to be made. You know, Kenny Omega, you know, huge into video games. It's kind of his gimmick, but he is like he's playing a big part behind the scenes in getting this game made. And he was a huge fan of the WCW and the No Mercy, you know, the WWF Aki games. But I feel like that in and of itself is, you know, all because of these games. So this, whatever the game that's coming out, you know, it's going to be inspired by this game from the mid 90s. And so I think, to me, again, honestly, what it did for me was it helped me really understand the storylines that were going on when I went back to watch earlier WCW stuff on the WWE Network or on probably YouTube or whatever. But it was like the perfect, it gave me a really good feel for who was in what group and what was a wrestler's finishing move. And so when I would see it on TV, I'm like, oh, okay, I know, like, I could watch, I played this game. And I played as Glacier, and I'd never seen him wrestle. So when I finally watched Glacier wrestle, I was waiting for him to hit that cryonic kick because I knew that was his finishing move. And so when he hit it, I'm like, all right, it's over. So this, to me, was like almost like an interactive wrestling encyclopedia for WCW, as far as, like, you know, you knew what the guy looked like now. You knew how he wrestled, because I feel like the wrestling movesets were very accurate. You knew what faction they were in. So I feel like this was, you mentioned here in the notes that we've got, you know, a time capsule, and it's all that. And then for me, it was also kind of a resource for understanding what WCW was like when it truly was at its peak.
Yeah, that's... Again, I keep sounding like a broken record. That's it. I mean, you learn the wrestlers, even if you didn't know who they were. If you weren't watching the show, maybe you started to watch the show because of the game, and it was that big. 1.8 million units in the United States. I don't have a worldwide number. I was not able to retrieve that number, but 1.8 million in the United States for a company in 1999 was not doing its best business. It was gearing towards those bad times. So that speaks volumes for where WCW was, you know, in early to mid 98, where the wrestling business was in 98, and just the structure and execution of the game was just fantastic. I had mentioned that this is a time capsule for me personally, you know, with those names in the save data of the game. But if you think about it, this game came out in 98. 98, 99, 2000. How many wrestling games between WCW, WWF, ECW, you know, I don't think the Backyard Wrestling games came out, but just between those three.
No, they were after WCW folded.
Just those three organizations. It was a lot of games, and we
probably close to 10 games.
We still talk about Revenge with this, you know, rose-colored glasses, maybe, but I still think it holds up. Now, I want to end on this. You mentioned this before, and I was kind of hoping you didn't.
Okay.
Is this the greatest wrestling, video game wrestling roster of all time? Now, when I say that, we're not going to count, you know, any game that has DLC or created wrestlers or created wrestler templates that are in the game. Just you get the game, you put it in your system, and it boots up. Is this the greatest roster of a wrestling game of all time?
No.
I agree.
Oh, really? I figured you were going to be surprised.
No, no. I'm going to say it's up there.
It's fantastic. It is amazing. But is it the best roster in a wrestling game? Absolutely not.
Do I dare?
But I have a game in mind.
Yes. Can I go for it? Can I take the guess?
Yeah, or if you have one too.
I think it's Here Comes the Pain.
Nope.
Okay. I'm a little surprised by that.
Okay.
All right. Is it Shut Your Mouth?
Nope.
Wow. Okay. Now I'm really intrigued. I have a dark horse.
Okay.
WrestleMania 19.
Nope.
Okay, I give up.
It is WWE 2K14.
Okay.
And that was the one that had the 30 years of WrestleMania mode.
Is that the one that's really heavily with the DLC, not the DLC, but unlockables for the Attitude Era?
No, that was WWE 13. WWE 14 was literally, you had showcase matches from every single WrestleMania leading up to WrestleMania 30 as the culmination where Daniel Bryan won the World Heavyweight Championship.
I don't acknowledge WrestleMania 30, though.
Why?
Undertaker lost.
That's fair.
Terrible. Terrible decision.
That's fair. It's hard to get past that, I understand. But no, so anyway, no, I believe that was the greatest roster because you had wrestlers from the 80s all the way to the 2010s. And so to me, that is the best roster. Now, if you're asking the best roster that represented a company during the time that it came
out, if that's your question, yes.
Then that's different. I would have to say probably, you already mentioned it, but I would say Here Comes the Pain.
Yeah, I should have worded that a little bit better. I mentioned DLC, but Legends, so to speak, I wanted to exclude from this as well.
Okay, that's
so
fair.
So my apologies on that. That was what I was going for when I mentioned no DLC. I should have clarified that. But bear with me. It's the first time I'm hosting this and probably the last time
that's
now.
Right.
Got it. Noted.
No.
But would you would go with Here Comes the Pain?
I would say top wrestler. So my top five rosters in a wrestling game that pertain to the era in which it came out. You have Here Comes the Pain. You have Shut Your Mouth. I agree. Those two are fantastic. You've got WWF No Mercy, another one where, yeah, there were some wrestlers left out, but again, I think it gave you a pretty good idea of what was going on TV at the time. You have WCW Revenge. so I would say those four. And then honestly, the only other one I can think of that really stands out is SmackDown versus Raw 2006.
You're not going with my wild card of WrestleMania 19.
I feel like that roster was tiny, though. I feel like there's a lot of folks missing from that one.
It was a smaller roster, but if you look at it, it's the first game with Goldberg. And
that's correct.
And Scott Steiner.
Yep.
And so you have the WCW, and Hogan's in it, too. So you get,
but again, that's not complete roster. That's okay. Overall roster was awesome. In which case, you go back to my argument that 2K14 had all these wrestlers that weren't previously in games, like the Ultimate Warrior, for example.
Well, these guys were active at the time, though.
That's fair. But again, it wasn't the most complete roster.
No. I'm just saying, in terms of it had the reason I say WrestleMania 19 and Shut Your Mouth is because if we're talking about this era, Attitude Era, NWO Era, Extreme Era, those two games had a little bit of everything.
You are absolutely, you could legit, those are the first games where you could have WCW versus WWF versus ECW matches and like have like wrestlers. So like, yeah, for you mentioned Shut Your Mouth, you could have Hulk Hogan, like Hollywood Hogan and Ric Flair and Scott Hall, or not Scott Hall, he wasn't in the game. Kevin Nash against Triple H, Stone Cold, The Rock, you know, I would do that. Honestly, for many years, I would do that with in game. I would always have like big you know, shows where you had the WCW guys, like DDP was another one that was in that game, Booker T. You know, you could have all these guys that were for the first time playable in these matches. You could put them against guys that were still around that were hot during the WWF Attitude Era, which I thought was really cool. Same thing. And again, I wasn't into ECW, but I agree. There were a lot of, not a lot. There was definitely a good handful. I mean, I'm thinking Tajiri, Taz, and RVD were probably the big three you were thinking of as far as ECW guys in a game.
Talking about WrestleMania 19, Dawn Marie's in it. Get out of here.
Oh, that's right, Dawn Marie. You do love Dawn Marie.
I do love Dawn Marie. But she's not the reason why I'm saying WrestleMania 19. It is, like you just said, it's Van Damme, it's Tajiri, Taz, the Dudleys, along with the WCW influx, Hogan, Flair, Goldberg, Steiner, and then WWE's new stars. It was the first game Cena was in, Lesnar was in it, American Badass, yep. Taker was in it, so... You had that hodgepodge of each group from this era that Revenge was coming from jumbled into a game, and you have that engine from Revenge and No Mercy that went onto the GameCube, which is the legacy and the WrestleMania games, although not the best. I'm not comparing WrestleMania 19 or 18 or even the Day of Reckoning games on GameCube to these N64 games, but they're similar. You can definitely feel the influence.
All right, that's going to wrap up this week's episode of the podcast. And again, thank you so much for listening. This one came from the vault back in 2022. And you heard it. We did a deep dive on WCW NWO Revenge. That's going to wrap it up for this week. Hopefully next week we'll be back with a regularly scheduled program here on the podcast. And until then, thank you so much for listening. And we'll talk to you soon.
Goodbye.